Well, looking for a prayer, I thought that the one that's on the back of the program would probably be an appropriate one. So if you have the program, you're invited to pray along with me. Holy Spirit, you who first enkindled in our hearts the joy of the gospel, renew that same joy in those who are preparing for the convocation of Catholic leaders. Inflame the hearts of our bishops and our diocesan delegations, leaders of national organizations and movements, clergy, religious, and laity, all who make this event possible, and Catholic leaders across the United States. Move us to welcome the word of life, depths of our hearts, and respond to the call of missionary discipleship. The Holy Spirit, transform our hearts, enable us to enter communion that you share with the Father and the Son. Mary, star of the new evangelization, pray for us. Thank you. They've asked me to make some opening remarks, so I guess I might as well just stay right here to do those. I had one businessman once tell me that he thought that his pastor knew more about Karl Marx than he did about St. Mark, because he said every time he preached, it was as if he was trying to make him feel guilty for being successful. And sometimes that is an impression that we create with some of the businessmen in our parishes and our communities. And in reality, there's nothing wrong with making a profit. Because firms that make a profit, they're showing that they have used resources correctly and that human needs have been met. But profit is not the sole criteria in a business or anything else. Your accounts can be in order, but the workers might feel humiliated, offended. Vocation to business should be seen as that, as a vocation, a response to our call to holiness. And in the gospel, Jesus tells us that we are to be in the world, but not of the world. And in that sense, even people who are engaged in business are also called not to separate life from faith, faith from life. We see what happens when we do that. We see it happen, what happens in the church when we separate faith from life, and in any other sphere. Pope Benedict was insistent that economics is a field of ethics, or at least economic decisions are ethical decisions. But this vocation to be in the world but not of the world doesn't mean that we are supposed to be against the world. And our being in the world is really a call to be for the world. And the business community has a very unique position of being in the world, and being in the world in a way that can create very great goods and spread prosperity and to many people, but at the same time there can be the other side of it. So, for my opening remarks, I think that's some of the things that we want to grapple with today. And with that, I will keep my remarks, I was told to do, brief.
Thank you, Excellency. So the way we're going to flow now is each panelist is going to give a one-minute introduction as to why they personally are passionate about this topic. And then we'll cycle through again and do about 5 minutes of introductory remarks by each of the panelists, and then we'll open to the more general discussion where we hope to hear from many of you for about 10 minutes, and then move to some small group discussion where you can group into sort of groups of four or five, and then sort of sum up at the end. So that's the sort of the structure for the rest of our session. So as Mark said, my name is Andrew Abella. I serve as the Provost or Chief Academic Officer of the Catholic University of America. I'm passionate about this topic, particularly the topic of the role of business in solving poverty. I spent the first 12 years of my postgraduate life in business, working for some of the largest and most powerful corporations in the world. During that time, I had a reversion experience. I'm a revert to the faith, and I discovered Catholic social teaching, and particularly Catholic social teaching about business. And I was amazed at the riches of insight in this teaching, how it answered the so many questions that I had about how does one live as a faithful Catholic in business, and how in particular does business reach out and help the poor and the marginalized. I spent 17 years since then as an academic, trying to bring the riches of this social teaching to businesses. Along the way, as Mark mentioned, I had the privilege of publishing the Catechism for Business, and also working with a bunch of really wonderful people to start up a business school at the Catholic University of America, a new business school particularly dedicated, oriented to bringing the light of the social doctrine to bear on business in all of their teaching and research. So that's me.
I'm Sister Norma Pimentel, and I am at the Overseas Catholic Charities at the border with Mexico in Texas. And I am immersed amongst the poorest of the poor, helping and reaching out to touch their lives and work with them and live with them. And I think that we can't talk about poverty without talking about this emerging community, immigrant community that we have. And so we need to respond to their needs and to their reality. And it's coming face to face with them that we are able to do the one thing that I find myself doing in a daily basis, which is restoring the life and dignity of the human person. And that's key if we want to reduce poverty in America.
Good morning, buenos dias. My name is Joseph. I work with the PICO National Network, which is a faith-based community organizing network. I've been with PICO for 12 years, and I'm excited to be on this panel because I get to sit close to Bishop Blair, who's been a kind of a hero of mine and someone that I've learned a lot from working and organizing in the Central Valley. And I'm also excited about this conversation because I actually believe that our country is in an existential fight for its soul right now. And I believe that we can't talk about poverty without talking about racism and about building bridges instead of walls and bringing people across race, across difference, across faith tradition together to have a serious conversation about how we really begin to dismantle narratives that other people and that try to restrict and constrain the circle of human concern. So that's why I'm excited to be here.
I am Bishop Stephen Blair from the Diocese of Stockton in California, which is in the Central Valley. And I would say that all the great issues that we face in this nation in terms of poverty and exclusion, et cetera, find expression somewhere in the Central Valley. In fact, the city that I am bishop of twice has received from Forbes magazine the award of being the most miserable city in the country. So my interest in the social teaching of the church really began after I was ordained and at the time of Pope Paul VI, when I read and studied his great document on the progress of peoples, on human development. And I feel that that's one of the great encyclicals of these last 50 years. And Pope Francis has very much embraced so much of what is was laid in foundation in that. He actually renamed one of the dicasteries in Rome, which was the Pontifical Council for Peace and Justice, to the Office for Integral Human Development. And this is a great interest of mine, that all people can participate and develop fully as human beings on the face of this earth, which has been given to us for our care by God.
Thank you. I got a new mic. Is this one working?
Yes.
Okay, good. So for the next part, we're each going to speak for about 5 minutes on our own reflections, on our own experience, our own perspective on the landscape that we're facing. So I will talk from the perspective of one observing business for the last 25 plus years. And I want to start with the observation that a common thing that is at the heart of most business education, common belief among many business people, is that the main purpose of business is to make as much money as you can, or to maximize profits, as it's normally phrased, and that beyond that, business is morally neutral. That's sort of the job of business. I think it's a really big mistake to think of things that way. Business is never morally neutral. It's either building up our common life or it's tearing it down. There is no sort of neutrality. Pope Francis wrote in Evangelii Gaudium, business is a noble vocation as long as it is challenged to a greater sense of meaning so that it contributes to the common good. So I want to reflect on that for a moment. And what I have observed over these years is two very different perspectives on business, two very very different attitudes to business among business leaders themselves. The first one is what economists call rentier capitalism, more commonly called crony capitalism. This is a form of capitalism that seeks to take as much money as you can, regardless of whether you earn that money, to do that legally where possible, but the focus is on wealth capture, as we would say. In earlier centuries, this was called piracy. Actually, more accurately, it was called privateering because it was a legal exercise where a government would give you a license to raid the ships of your enemies and take whatever you could, and you got to keep a share of it and give the rest to your government. But it was all about capturing wealth, not creating it. The rival vision of business is what we call principled entrepreneurship, where the purpose is on creating wealth. Obviously, you need to take some of what you create, but the primary focus is on the creation. So you're creating job opportunities and you're creating useful and delightful things that help people in their lives. Crony capitalism, at the risk of stating the obvious, not only doesn't help the poor, it makes more poor, because its focus is on the wealthy and powerful becoming wealthier and more powerful. And therefore, a consequence of that is the rest of the world gets poorer. Principled entrepreneurship helps the poor in a number of ways. More generally, by providing work opportunities, providing affordable products, and more specifically, when there's a deliberate attempt to start and foster businesses in blighted areas. So areas where there's a lack of employment, a lack of good services, and so on. Our business school is engaged in an effort like this in the District of Columbia right now. I want to close with I think, a really important observation that is touched on in Evangelii Gaudium number 204, which is that principled entrepreneurship doesn't just happen. So Adam Smith's invisible hand left alone doesn't create principled entrepreneurship. If anything, it creates crony capitalism. If the market is left entirely to itself, you just get people becoming greedier. Regulation, however, doesn't typically give you principled entrepreneurship either. It is necessary to ensure that you have an even playing field, but in general, regulation runs the risk of giving crony capitalists more tools for wealth capture. It's a long and complicated argument, which maybe we can get into later, but for now I just want to sort of state that what is necessary for principled entrepreneurship follows from St. John Paul II's famous line where he said, "There are no just structures without people who want to be just." Right? So likewise, there is no principled entrepreneurship without entrepreneurs who want to be principled. The entrepreneurs themselves have to love justice and have to love the poor. The market by itself doesn't do that. It has been my observation that the most likely thing to make an entrepreneur principled is religious faith, just from observing and some empirical evidence as well. So to help business help the poor, we need to do two things. One is we need to disciple business leaders, catechize them, right, help them grow in their faith. And two is we then have to show them how to put that faith into action in their businesses so that they serve the common good and serve the poor.
Well, I'm about spending that money that the wealthy people have. Actually, having and working with the many immigrants that come to our country in great numbers have really immersed me in an experience of encounter with the many immigrants that are here amongst us and that arrived all broken and destroyed because of all that they go through to arrive to our country and to be able to find meet them and welcome them has been a transforming experience for all of us, for the immigrants themselves, as it has been for us, the volunteers and the community that have reached out and opened their hearts with compassion and kindness and welcomed them. And that encounter alone has truly brought down barriers and walls, you know, amongst us, because there's no Democrats or Republicans, there's no rich and poor. It's just one people, one community, one presence, as no matter who we are, whether we are Catholics or Baptists, or not everything is set aside because we become one presence, one people. And it has been amazing to see that transforming presence of God in us when we allow ourselves to be face-to-face with this reality, with this human reality that changes us to be embody mercy and to be part of who we are as in our faith and living that out. And so I think that for me, it has been key, you know, and I mentioned as I opened, the importance of restoring human dignity, which was what the main one question that I came to terms with right from the beginning when we started to help the thousands of immigrants coming to this country. And I was asked, what are you doing, Sister Norma, here in the respite center that we are? We had thousands of people helping and arriving to our centers. And as I looked at everybody, I realized what we're doing is restoring human dignity. That's what we're doing. And that was key because it made us break all the barriers of who we are and what we stand for and we move forward. Everybody helped. Everybody reached out. It was not handing down anything to anybody or giving them things just because I'm just being charitable. It was actually sharing what was rightfully theirs, you know, and making them feel people and respected, and we are together. And so I've seen young kids come to our center to help from all over the United States and other parts of the countries, and they all their faith has changed. All of a sudden, now they are re-emerging into their faith, wanting to live out their faith back home in their community. And so I think that is what is helping us to transform our church, our lives, and to live them out, you know. And so it's helping all of us to know that we have a responsibility with one another, you know. And the rich open up and share and give of themselves and says, I want to be part of this. I want to be able to help, but not just like handing out or giving you money just because I'm giving you a charity, but because we are together joining in a response to make our life our faith alive, you know, and living it out. And so I think that is key to helping us all reduce poverty, because we start to become agents of change and actually do our part, and everything gets to be right. So I think that's how I see our role as church today. Thank you.
So I would be remiss if I didn't also say one other reason why I'm excited to be here this morning, and that's because I get to share a room with so many of my colleagues from the Catholic Campaign for Human Development. If it wasn't for CCHD, PICO, the organization I work for, would not exist. I could not have made the leap from being a Jesuit volunteer in Boston to then becoming a community organizer, a lowly community organizer, which I believe is a ministry that that is called for at this moment of renewal in our church. It's, at, I think, at the core of what we're talking about this week at this convocation. I want to just share a brief story about a woman, an Indian woman named Sashi, who is a parishioner at the parish that I attend in Los Angeles, California. I go to a church called Dolores Mission Catholic Church. Father Greg Boyle, who many of you know, was the pastor there. And Sashi comes to church with her husband once or twice a month on Sundays, and attends a 9 o'clock mass. And we don't see her all the time because she works three jobs. She's really quiet. She doesn't really kind of talk to very many people. She's got her kind of little group of friends that she eats tacos with after mass. But, you know, she recently told me, she said, you know, I'm working at Universal Studios. She said, I'm working in a garment factory, and I work for the Los Angeles Dodgers. She helps people cross the street for Dodger games. And she says, I'm so grateful to God when the Dodgers are not in town on Sunday so that she can go to mass. And in a couple weeks ago, she came up to me with tears, and she says, you know, she says, I get 5 free tickets a year to go to Universal Studios. And I'll never be able to use them because I'm always working to pay the rent to live in Los Angeles. And she said, I want you and your wife to have them. I want you and your wife to take your family and friends. And the reason I'm sharing that story with you, because I believe this conversation about poverty has a direct impact upon our church and our people. Poverty in America is not some outside kind of theoretical issue. It's not something that we go out and encounter. It's in our pews every day, and it inhibits our people's ability to fully experience their Catholic faith. 1 in 5 Americans, American children are living in poverty today. You have all heard the statistics. Half of homes, half of jobs pay less than $28,000 a year. One half of all jobs in this country pay less than $28,000 a year. There was a fascinating article that just came out, a fascinating study about how climate change is going to represent a massive transfer of wealth from the poor to the rich as our climate heats up and as people leave southern states for the coast and for northern states. And I think it's worthwhile reading an excerpt from Pope Francis at a recent gathering of what was called the World Meeting of Popular Movements, which the USCCB and CCHD and PICO helped to co-sponsor in Modesto, which a few of my colleagues up here attended. He says that the first task is to put the economy at the service of peoples. Human beings and nature must not be at the service of money. Let us say no to an economy of exclusion and inequality where money rules rather than service. That economy kills. That economy excludes. That economy destroys Mother Earth. And I think it's significant. The Pope talks about this disease, this world disease, not being HIV or influenza, but affluenza. This disease called affluenza, that is a disease that causes people to believe in their material possessions as being intimately connected with their human value. And the Pope at this recent World Meeting of Popular Movements, actually the one in Bolivia that I got to attend back in July 2015, talked about the parable of the Good Samaritan, and he brought it up again in Modesto. You've all heard the story. Man is beaten and bruised on the side of the road. A priest and a Levite pass him by. The Samaritan attends to him. And Pope Francis borrows from Martin Luther King Jr. When he talks about it, he says, you know, we can all theorize and imagine why the priest and Levite passed the beaten man on the side of the road. Says, could be because the priest and Levite had to get to a church meeting, an ecclesiastical meeting, and they couldn't be late. Says, or maybe it could be that the priest and the Levite were observing religious law that said you couldn't touch someone during high holy days, high festivals. And so it was against the law to kind of interact and get too close. And so they would be maybe compassionate by proxy, but not get close to this beaten and bruised man. And then a third theory might be that they were on their way to a Jericho Road Improvement Committee. That they were trying to get at the root cause of why the road to Jericho was so dangerous, and that's why they passed him up. But King and the Pope say that their imagination takes them to a different place. They say that the reason that the priest and Levite passed the beaten man up was because they were afraid. Because they asked themselves the wrong question. They asked themselves the question, if I stop to help this man, what will happen to me? And he says the right question to ask is, if I do not stop to help this man, what will happen to him? That is the right question. And in this time of immense fear that is trying to be stoked in our hearts and in our lives, a fear driven by racial anxiety, that is driven by the growing diversification of our society. Our communities, our churches are becoming more and more diverse. We heard about it in the plenary this morning. And the church, according to Dr. John Powell, is a critical, what's called mediating institution that helps people kind of filter the messages that they're getting about immigrants, about African Americans, about Muslims, about the poor, and helps them decide whether they kind of bond or break, as Dr. John Powell talks about, he says, which leads to fear and anxiety and kind of in-group identity and anger, or if it leads to greater empathy and bridge building and inclusion and belonging. I share this because in PICO, in our organizing, we are trying to develop a greater analysis of the role that racism and structural racism plays in driving poverty and inequality in our country, but also the ways in which it tears us apart from our sisters and brothers, the ways in which racial narratives get baked into our subconscious, all of us in this room, just by virtue of being in this country. You know, 4th of July is around the corner. We talk about the Declaration of Independence. The first words of the Declaration of Independence are, we the people. And I think the existential question still facing our country is, who do we mean by we? Who is the we we're talking about? And we're still trying to get further away from this we that was defined as white male landowners and to a more inclusive we that, as Sister was talking about, requires us to encounter and see each other differently. And that's the work of formation and training that PICO is trying to be about with a number of partners, CCHD included, inside of our parishes to help build those bridges so that it's not just at a parish festival. You know, so that might be a good first step where we have a nice festival and everyone is invited, but where we're still segregated, we're still in our silos by language, by race, by color of our skin. And we're trying to get people into a different level of encounter. I'll just say as well before I wrap that, you know, we think a lot about sort of the need for both charity and justice in our church, that there are two feet that are necessary to walk the walk of being Catholic, that you can't have one without the other, that the best works of charity actually address the root cause of poverty and injustice in our communities. And again, CCHG is critical in that endeavor. So let me just, I'll end as well by lifting up a couple examples of this. The World Meeting of Popular Movements, which again, I referenced earlier in my remarks in Modesto, was this wonderful kind of two-way street of evangelization, as my colleague Joe Fleming has talked about. It was this beautiful gathering of bishops and Catholic Church leaders encountering protagonistas, the protagonists who are struggling to end poverty and end injustice in our communities every day, sharing with them the roots of Catholic social teaching and the deep history of the church fighting poverty, and then frankly the protagonistas evangelizing to our bishops as well, sharing their stories, sharing their struggles, and finding new ways to collaborate as organizations struggling for systems change. The Diocese of Fresno, anyone here from the Diocese of Fresno? All right. The diocese is celebrating, I believe it's 50th anniversary this year. And the bishop, Armando Ochoa, instead of having a great big mass or having a great big party and inviting everyone to come, he's actually going out to the periphery. He's doing a year-long sort of visit to parishes all over the Central Valley, Fresno being the fastest-growing diocese in the country. And then the church that I attend, Dolores Mission, which I referenced earlier, they convert their sanctuary every night into a homeless shelter. And they invite those homeless people to march with them for immigration reform. And they get involved in the organizing ministry. So it's both the feet of charity and justice. And in PICO, you know, we're experimenting more and more with the work around sanctuary, around protecting our immigrant sisters and brothers, and around getting our sisters and brothers to vote in greater numbers as another form of evangelization in our communities. Thank you.
Gathering illustrates how important it is for the church to listen, those who are outside the church, and for the church for us to listen to one another. Everything that has been said here deserves extensive discussion and dialogue. And I think that is what Pope Francis has truly been emphasizing, on the importance of dialogue. And again, I must say, it goes back to Pope Paul VI 50 years ago, where he, in his letter on the church, stressed the importance of dialogue. And I only believe that by sitting down together like this, can we really solve or move ahead as a church? Let me just mention a couple things here that I think are related. Number one, in 2014, the Pontifical Council for Peace and Justice published a very fine document called The Vocation of the Business Leader. And if you haven't seen it, I hope you would look at it. Because it's the purpose is to lift up that as a business leader, you are being called by Christ and God through your work to evangelize and proclaim the gospel. And as a business leader, how are you promoting human dignity? How are you promoting the common good? The other comment, which I think might summarize again everything here, we did have this wonderful meeting in February in Modesto, the regional gathering of world movements that Joseph was talking about, and Cardinal Turkson presided over it, but it was really run. It was hosted by the church, but it was run by all the people who attended and organized. And so the Holy Father sent a letter, which the Cardinal read, and Joseph quoted from some of that letter. It's a very significant letter in my way of thinking. But after the Cardinal Turkson read the letter, he then gave a talk, and he said, I don't know. He says, if there's anything else that I can say, the Pope has said just about everything. But he went on to give a talk on development. He is the head of the Congregation for Integral Human Development. And I'm just going to say what he said here in one paragraph, because I think it summarizes everything, that we are the gospel and the social teaching of the church is to promote integral human development. And he said that the goal of development is to rebuild society in which every person is seen as fully human. That's the dignity of every human person. To rebuild society where every human person has a full voice in the decisions that shape their lives. And thirdly, is able to thrive and reach their human potential. And when if that can be realized, that's we're going to be beyond poverty. But that it's not just a matter of getting out of poverty. It's a matter of being able to become more fully a human being made in the image and likeness of God and living in a community of the common good. And the last point here might also help to summarize. I studied very carefully. There were three world meetings of popular movements. Three of them the Pope was present at. The fourth one, which was the regional one here in Modesto, he sent a letter. But I read all that he said, and I've given a few talks where I've tried to summarize his points. And I think that the underlying issue is not really present in this room. The underlying issue, he calls it a globalization of indifference, where people just don't really care. This is a group here. This is a group that cares, okay? But he said, there are three things necessary to change this. First, to place economy at the service of people. And we heard that quite a bit today, that in the economy, everybody has a right to make a decent living and so forth, but that ultimately it has to be at the service of people. And one gentleman talked about how he took such a very small salary this year so all of his people could receive their wages. Well, that's at the service of people. Secondly, he said, to work for peace and justice. Work for peace and justice. Obviously, it is God is going to ultimately bring it about, but we have to work for peace and justice. And thirdly, to defend Mother Earth. We didn't really talk too much about that, but it relates, this whole issue of defending Mother Earth has so much to do with everything that we are talking about in terms of integral human development, integral ecology and development and so forth. So I think those were really kind of the issues that we talked about. There is so much more I think that could be said, I just think that the opportunity to listen to one another and to hear from one another. And as one gentleman here said, this is a chance for all of us in the church that pro-life is not just for the unborn, that pro-life is from the unborn through every dimension of life, and so is justice. Justice is for the unborn all the way through life. That really ultimately in many ways they are one and the same with kind of different perspectives. So those are my reflections. Thank you. And thanks to all of our panel for all their wonderful comments.